Welcome to Hallel Fellowship, on the internet at hallel.info. Today's study explores the Torah reading Balak, covering Numbers, chapter 22, verse 2 through 25, verse 9. Can Balaam's head-scratcher argument with his donkey uncover why this ancient soothsayer for hire was more apt to bless Israel than curse? And we'll see that the parallels between this for-profit purported prophet and his pack animal help us better understand the Messiah he unwittingly foretold.
So if you notice the scriptural text would point out what block first introduced in Numbers 22, it points out that as far as he may not be a Moabite by birth, and that he points out that he's sending off a notification to find Balaam of the sons of his people, and the phrase there can mean referred to Balak's people as opposed to Balaam's people. So it's very possible that Balak himself was not actually a Moabite per se. He may actually be a descendant or a relative of the descendants of Balaam. It's an interesting concept, doesn't really matter, but it's just a minor detail point. And if that's the case, that means he's not actually a Moabite by birth, and then because he shouldn't theoretically be king of Moab, but that's okay. That's not terribly relevant, but it's just kind of interesting concept. What I want to bring up to you, which is also indicative of what's happening here in our story, is that you'll note that Balak realizes or recognizes that Balaam, whoever Balaam blesses is blessed, whoever Balaam curses is cursed. This is designed to make our brains trigger Abraham. That's its intent. It's been heavily discussed in multiple books regarding this topic matter, regarding that Genesis 12, discussing that those who bless Abraham versus those who curse Abraham, those who bless you are blessed, those who curse you are cursed. And so it's designed to give us the idea that, okay, Balaam, you have this ability to bless and curse, and you're going to go up against a group of people that if you bless them, you get blessed, but if you curse them, you get cursed. It's an inverted process, which tells you that Abraham and Balaam are inverted people. So unlike Balaam, who he projects or pronounces curses or blessings, Abraham is not the one who projects or pronounces curses or blessings. He is the recipient of curses or blessings. And that, of course, is inverted upon the person who gives the curse or the bless. So that's designed to give us the idea that, okay, Balaam, you're going to go up against Abraham for all practical purposes. You're going against the opposite, your equal opponent, which Balaam, I'm not sure how well he knew Abraham or the concept of Abraham. It's kind of hard to say. But either way, that's the idea. It's supposed to give us that mental picture. You have the battle of two opposing viewpoints, two opposing cultures, two opposing peoples, which kind of makes sense in some level. So in this idea, I know Jewish tradition has Balaam being a descendant of Abraham's relatives. Again, that's tradition. No one actually knows who Balaam's ancestors are. But the idea is he's a descendant of them, potentially from Laban, as Jewish tradition is, or from somebody else. That's not terribly relevant. What I do want to bring to your attention, however, in Balaam's activities is he has a job of blessing and cursing, which we learned from James chapter 3. Actually, not just James, a few indicators along the lines throughout our entire Bible that encourage this. But James chapter 3 discusses the idea of being able to be curse or bless out of the same mouth. So to read James 3 out loud, I'm not going to say discuss James 3, but just it's good to hear it and have it in our minds. We're discussing Balaam. So this is James chapter 3, verse 1. My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment. We all stumble many things. Anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man, also able to bridle the whole body. Indeed, we put bits in horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and that we turn their whole body. Look also at ships, though they are so large, are driven by fierce winds. They are turned by a very small rudder, wherever a pilot desires. Even to the tongue is a little member, and boasts great things. See how great a force a little fire can kindle? And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell or Gehenna. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude or image of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessings and cursings. My brother, these things ought not be so. Does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives, or a grapevine bear figs? Thus no spring can yield both salt water and fresh. You who is wise and understanding among you, let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have a bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing will be there. But the wisdom that is from above, first impure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So you have this admonition from James that this tongue, what we come out of our mouths, is a very important thing that affects both us, the speaker, as well as the listener who's hearing it. So we have responsibility to pay attention to what comes out of our mouths. So Balaam, we're dealing with Balaam, he has been hired to curse. That's a bad thing, of course, comes out of your mouth. But he is also supposed to be a servant of God to some capacity. I don't know Balaam's personal religious viewpoints. That really matter to me. But he's supposed to serve God at some level in a prophet sense. Hence Balak, who, if he is from Balaam's territory, as far as where Balaam lived, would be familiar with Balaam's skill level or talent or soothsaying capabilities. For the most part, we would call Balaam a soothsayer, as far as in our conceptual idea of him, as opposed to a traditional prophet like Isaiah or Jeremiah or Ezekiel. He's more in the category of soothsayer. Now, soothsayers does not mean a soothsayer cannot tell truth. It doesn't mean a soothsayer cannot tell you or speak what is accurate. Soothsayer just means someone who speaks what is desired to hear by the hearer. But they can still speak truth. They can still speak to demonic worlds or angelic worlds or God himself. It's not that God cannot speak to soothsayers. He says, you, Israel, should not have a soothsayer. You have prophets, that's fine, but not soothsayers specifically. Balaam falls the soothsayer category. He's not technically speaking God's word all the time. He's speaking what he's paid to speak. That's his typical job. So this would not be Balaam's, I suspect this Daniel Age's opinion here, but jumping off by topic to opinion. I don't think this is the first time Balaam's been hired to curse or bless someone. I'm inclined to believe or think that Balaam's probably been hired in the past to also curse or bless someone. Hence, how Balak figured out whoever he blesses is blessed, whoever he curses is cursed. He had to have some kind of reputation or capability prior to this particular event. So this is not his first go around, so to speak. He's been around or has done this probably in the past. Okay, that was my opinion. Now, moving out of my opinion, go back to our topic here. We're to compare an interesting discussion matter. So in this discussion matter, we're to discuss the donkey. Okay. There's one line I forgot to mention. I apologize. One word phrase I should mention before talking about the donkey was the going with. So you'll note that it seems somewhat contradictory by God. When God said, don't go with the men, the next time he said, now go with the men, then he said, now God was upset and flipped his mind. Now I'm upset with you for going. It seems somewhat contradictory or arbitrary. There's actually specific reasons for that. First of all, when God said, don't go with the men, the Hebrew word with used there, the Hebrew phrase, which we translate as just go with them or don't go with them or to not go with them. The Hebrew word phrase there means to agree with. Not just going with, but go in agreement. So as far as the objective is the same, to follow that objective. That's that term with. And that's when God said, don't do that. The second time when God said go with, he used a different Hebrew word, which means to accompany. You can travel, accompany them, but don't go with them in the form of don't agree with them. Does that make sense? Those are two different Hebrew words. We lose that in English. It's unfortunate we lose it in English. It would help make sense more in the text. If it did use the word agreement or accompany, that would make more sense to us. We would get less confused. But unfortunately, translators don't really think about that when they discuss that phrase. It's disappointing, but that's just how it works. So deal with English. That's how it is, right? So we had this going with that God said, essentially, yes, Balaam, you may accompany them, but don't go with them in agreement. I mean, you're not going to follow what they're telling you to do. You're just going to accompany them with what God told them. You may accompany them. Hence why it got a little confusing when God then seemed to have changed his mind, because later, as the angel thing, it appears that that God is recognizing or acknowledging with Balaam that you aren't accompanying, you are choosing to go in agreement with, meaning that that agreement problem is the issue, not the actual accompanying them. Hence why the angel said, no, go ahead and go, but you have to speak what I'm telling you to speak, not what you want to speak. So you're not going to do an agreement with Balak, you're going to accompany these people to Balak. There's a difference. So that's the subtle differences. Now let's go to the donkey. I want to talk about the donkey. Donkey's pretty cool. I like donkeys. I pet one once. It's not that great. That's okay. My kid tried to ride one. It didn't like her doing that. Go figure. Yeah, they like to kick a lot, by the way. And just in case you ever want to ride a donkey, yeah, they kick a bit. They're not bad as mules, but they still kick. Okay, let's go to this donkey here. We have this interesting discussion about donkey. The donkey has, obviously we go through the story, the donkey has these attempts to go around this angel, which is in the way, the Balaam can't see. He travels out in the field the first time. They squeeze Balaam against a rock or a fence. I think it's a fence. The second time, and then just finally the just sits down. I quit. I can't do it. So there's three attempts the donkey tries to get through through this pathway. So I'm going to bring a few details to your point, or to the subject matter here. I'm jumping to my notes real quick. Oh, yeah. Okay, so this is the fun part. I think it's fun. You may not. I think it's fun. Oh, speak more slowly? Oh, I apologize. I will speak slower. Bad habit of mine to speak too quickly. All right, I'll try to speak down. Speak slower. Thank you, Jeff, for bringing that up. Okay, so I'll speak slower. Now let's go to this donkey subject matter. So we have these details discovered about this donkey. I'm going to talk about this donkey, but a few things on my board here discuss the donkey. We're going to compare the donkey to Balaam, the man. All right. So these are two different characters, two different in the storyline, but they are comparable in what they're doing, what they're being taught and learned. So far, I'll lose you on this one. This is an important subject matter to discuss. So the donkey itself, a donkey, I'm going to put donkey on this side. You guys can see that, right? It's off the board. It's on the board. And then Balaam over here. So there's two different characters being discussed with inside our text. We have donkey and we have Balaam. But they are virtually identical. We'll discuss why that's the case. So by the way, this story is written down in Numbers. We ourselves don't know how Moses got this much information. Somehow he got the information from somebody, whether it was through somebody who heard the story or whatever, I don't really know. But somehow Moses got this and recorded the whole thing down its entirety as its own storyline, which is really important to understand. This story was written contextually as a whole complete package. Here is a package of a story, as opposed to other parts of our Torah and the Bible in general can interact with other sections quite thoroughly. And this, to be fair, this one does too. But the intent of this is to focus on it is a complete package. So the answers to your questions are contained inside the story. Does that make sense? As opposed to being forced to go out to the story to find the answers to the nuances or the unusual symbols being described. So it's a whole package as its own unit, which is not common in our Bibles, but it is in this instance. So we have this story, this story of this donkey. So donkeys are not a horse, okay? I know they have certain similarities, but there are distinct differences. Horses and donkeys, horses are considered strong, vibrant, and considered less humble. Put it that way. A horse is not classified as a humble animal. A donkey is classified as a humble animal. They look very similar, but they are in fact very different in their personality types. Donkeys are humble in the form of not they themselves are humble, but how people consider them being humble. They're a lowly creature. I'm not referring to the donkey's personality necessarily being always lowly, but people consider donkeys as a lower level of a horse. Like they consider horse or the magnificent horses, whatever horse breed you like. The donkeys are considered the simpler ones, much like a mule, but donkeys are smarter. She's right. Donkeys are smarter than horses in most instances. I say most because there are some dumb ones too. Okay. Yeah, smart and mean. But mules are worse. They're dumb and mean. Anyway, in my opinion, of course. That's Daniel's opinion that mules are dumb and mean. They may not be, but that's my opinion. It's okay. Just sorry to point that out. It's an opinion point on mules. So donkeys themselves, they're designed to be a reliable servant. So re- reliable servant. Sorry, it's a R, not a P. Reliable servant. That's its job. So it's designed to serve the individual, its master. That's its function. As far as it, I'm not referring to a wild donkey. I'm referring to one that's domesticated, one that's being used by a servant or by a master. So that's its job. It's a pack animal at some level, but it's also designed to carry you from place to place. It's supposed to serve you in some capacity. That's its function. So it's supposed to be a reliable servant. And unlike the horse, humans consider it as a more of a humble species, a humbler version. It's much smaller, not nearly as strong or powerful, but it's more classified as a humble, as hence why it uses a, much like mules are, similar to pack animals in its primary function. So it's a very reliable servant and somewhat humble. I'm not saying the donkey thinks it's humble. I'm saying people consider it humble. If you contrast that to a horse, it's cousin. And its design, its intent, as far as the master of the donkey, its job is to go where the master wants it to go. So it goes where it's directed. So it's as we understand, we got the comparison within, I think it's Micah, we just read it, about the horse is bridled, James, bridled by the bridle, right? The rider pulls left, the horse is forced to go right or left. So it's designed, a donkey, much like a horse, you have a bridle on it to pull it right or pull it left to make it go. So it's designed, it's supposed to go where the master tells it to. So it's supposed to follow master. It may not necessarily want to all the time, but that's its job, to follow the master. I realize that there are stubborn donkeys too, just like a mule is, but not all of them. Now in this instance, we have this is its primary function. This instance in our story, we have the donkey doing specific things, okay? In this story, for example, it's been told by Balaam, its master, to go on a dangerous road. So it goes, the first task is go on a dangerous road. G-E-R, and it's a road, all right? Now, this dangerous road is designed to kill either, in this case, obviously it's Balaam that's going to kill Balaam. The donkey perceives there is danger here. Now, I don't know if the donkey could actually like physically see the angel and interpret what a sword looks like. I don't even know what donkeys think. But either way, the donkey perceived there was danger here. So it's designed to go a dangerous road, but the donkey, instead of going the dangerous road, changed. It changed the course. So donkey changed routes. That's a CH. Change. So it had a particular path it was told to go by the master, Balaam. Go this way. And the donkey starts going that way. Danger then says, no, I'm going this way. I'm changing the direction of my intended master. Okay. So of course, then the Balaam beats it and gets it back on the road around the angel. Now I bring this up to you. Imagine yourself as the angel. Pretend you were the angel. You have this dude coming along in a boat, in a donkey, right? Your job is to prevent, or if the dude comes in closer, you kill it. Now, is it so difficult for you to walk up to him and kill him? Is it really that hard? Think about it. Oh, I have this big sword. Oh, he's 10 feet away and he turns left to go to the field. What? I can't go walk after him and hack him down? Come on. I'm an angel. This is so difficult. It's not difficult. That's not the angel's job. The angel was teaching something to Balaam through this storyline, which we are now learning, that he had to change his route. Now, the next task is, again, the donkey is directed by its master, Balaam, to go on a route, a task that's also difficult, which is dangerous. It's not a road this time. This is a dangerous road. The road is a dangerous path. Now, paths are considered smaller than roads, right? Think about it. You know, cars are on roads. Do cars drive on paths? No, they don't. People walk on paths. Well, they shouldn't. Okay. They're not supposed to. I do realize there are some crazy drivers. They're not supposed to drive on paths. They're supposed to drive on roads. So there's a dangerous path. The donkey's being told by Balaam, follow the path, right? I have a destination to go. My master's telling me to do this. The donkey then, however, instead of that, she changes the path to go against the fence line. And of course, as a result, Balaam gets his leg crushed and damaged or whatever. The law gets hurt. So donkey again perceives danger. I'm being told to go on this path. I'm going to change direction in order to preserve my life and, of course, my master's life by squeezing myself against the fence line. Makes sense so far. The donkey's pretty perceptive. Now, eventually, of course, Balaam gets upset, beats her, you hurt my leg, yada, yada, yada. We get the point. Now, again, could the angel just sat there with his sword and stuck his sword out sideways? It's a pathway. We're not talking like a 20-mile wide road. It's a pathway. oh, you're going this way. I just took my sword out here. Now, look, I chopped your head off, but you just walked across it. It's not that hard. But the angel, of course, does not. He just stands there. I assume it's a he. Yeah, angel lord, yeah. So he stands there and just waits. And the donkey, of course, is able to squeeze by the path, to squish the side or whatever, but squeeze the path and get Balaam safely through. But the point is the donkey had to change the path Balaam was on. Did Balaam want the donkey to follow and crush along the fence line? No, he did not. Balaam had it in his mind to go in the middle of the path, which you would normally travel. The less dangerous spot is the center. The donkey had to forcefully change the path. Now, of course, Balaam gets past that. Now we have another dangerous spot. Now, a spot is not a path or a road, is it? A spot is a particular location. It's not enough room. Spot is just one spot. Now, can you get around the spot? The donkey determines, no, I cannot. I cannot get around this spot. My master's telling me to go through to this spot and keep on going, I assume, past the spot. And the donkey said, I can't do this. This is dangerous to me. Donkey doesn't change direction, but changes the pathway and just sits down. Yeah, it's a roadblock. So the donkey sits down. Still not what the master wanted, right? So each time the master had an intent, go on this dangerous road, go on the dangerous path, go the dangerous spot. Not the master perceived it was dangerous, but the master was directing it to the other spots, not realize it was dangerous. The donkey then has to change the dangerous road to go over a less dangerous road, change dangerous path to go the dangerous fence or the simpler fence, less dangerous fence. Then eventually I can't go past. I'm just going to accept the fact I can't get past and sit down and shut up, so to speak. And that's when God opened his mouth. So now that you sit down and shut up, so to speak, because pursue your own way, now you get to open its mouth, open mouth. And what's a donkey do when he opens his mouth? Donkey tells the truth. That's his job. Tell the truth. So in this instance, it declares the truth to the donkey's master, which of course is a job of a servant. And then eventually once it declares the truth to the master that, hey, have I ever mistreated you? Ever done anything wrong before? No, I have not. So why are you beating me? And of course, Balaam says, well, because you humiliated me, you embarrassed me, yada, yada, yada. All the excuses that Balaam thinks of. And then eventually, once the truth has been declared to Balaam, then God says, or God opens his eyes, open eyes, and Balaam now sees. All right? This is the basic principle of the donkey. This is a mirror or duplicate for Balaam the man. Now we discuss Balaam's side, okay? Same story, same scenario, but now we're comparing Balaam. It tells me that God's saying, Balaam, you are a donkey. another way of wording it. This is Balaam on my right-hand side. We'll go over to the Balaam section here. So Balaam, a true prophet, if he was a prophet, I know Balaam's more classified as a soothsayer category, but he still claims he's a prophet. So Balaam's supposed to be a prophet. As a prophet is supposed to speak what God says to speak, or in the case of Hosea, do what God says to do. It was a little light there. So that's what a prophet's job is. So a prophet's supposed to be a reliable servant. We learn from the Torah, from Moses, that's an N, by the way, Moses, that if a servant or prophet speaks of his own accord, his own words, he is no longer speaking God's behalf, he's speaking his own behalf. But a true prophet speaks on God's behalf. It relays to people what God told you. God said this, I thus declares the Lord. All these phrases, we have lots of different examples of prophets speaking correctly. And if they lie about it, they're held accountable. Right? Not that God won't fulfill what God said he would do, but the prophet has to tell the truth. And both a prophet for a prophet. Yeah, we'll discuss. Yeah, he does have a prophet for a prophet, but that's a different prophet. They're supposed to be a reliable servant. And of course, that's a prophet's job. Now, in this case, Balaam's technically classified as a soothsayer, but he's still supposed to be in the prophet category. I don't really like combining soothsayers with prophets, but technically it's still the same groupings. They're kind of weird. I don't like doing that, but it's supposed to be. Now, is a prophet supposed to be the one in charge of everything? They're not the king, are they? No, they're not. Prophets are humbled down below a king. So a true good prophet is a humble prophet. For example, how many of you recall, was it Jeremiah? I think it was Jeremiah being dumped in a sewage pit. Yeah. So a sewage pit, is that a high status? I would hope not. If you think that's a high status, you really should consider changing careers. But it's not a great. Yeah, she did point out that Balaam wasn't a soothsayer in Tablak's eyes, which is true. He wasn't in Tablak's, but as far as the Torah is concerned, he's a soothsayer. Yes, humbled. Yeah, humbled. And a lot of prophets were humbled. Yes, humbled. Yeah. Humble. So we look at the example of there were prophets that weren't super ultra humble. Elisha didn't have to be humbled per se, but most of the prophets were humbled in various categories of their lives. You can row through them. Isaiah had a fairly good, less humbling experience, but he did initially because God burned his mouth. It's kind of, there's some humbling thing going on for you're going to serve God, you're going to be a humble servant. And what is the prophet's job? The prophet's job, much like this, is to follow his master. Who is the master of a prophet? The master prophet is the one who gives him the prophecy. In this case, it's supposed to be God. So follow the master, but follow the master. The prophet's master is God. It still follows the master. That's it. I missed my A here. In this case, it's supposed to be God. Because of a normal standard prophet, God would be the master. So in this story, we have continue on here. And much like how this following master, we have this scenario where in this case, Balaam is supposed to follow his master, God the master would direct it. But in this instance, we have that Balaam chose to follow a dangerous road on his own accord. He desired to follow a dangerous road. This case is to go to Balak to declare these curses to get blessed for money. There's a dangerous road to him. So just like Balaam ordered the donkey to follow a dangerous road, Balaam himself is the one who selected the dangerous road. Now, did God select the dangerous road? No, he did not. God initially told him, don't go, right? God said, don't go. Don't go with the don't agreement. Balaam clearly wanted to go in agreement. He wanted to follow in the category that Balak was paying him to do. So he was going to go in agreement with, but God did not want him to. So Balaam, unlike a good prophet, chose his own path to follow a dangerous route, to go against the master. So in this dangerous route, to go against the master, what path did Balaam follow? He tried to follow this dangerous route. What was the dangerous route? The route was to curse Israel, or curse Jacob, all to Israel. That was the dangerous road that Balaam was going to follow. That was what he was trying to do. That was being paid to go do this road. That was his objective. So the road, even though the donkey's compared to a road, and this one, the dangerous is to curse Israel, not just Israel, because roads are big, right? Roads are big compared to paths or spots. He was brought up to curse all of Israel. He can see the whole nation all at once. So this is a big, meaning he got to see everybody to curse them all. That was his dangerous goal, or dangerous road. And he brings up these offerings, the Balak does with the oxen and the sheep and such, and kills them all off and burns them all up. And the Balaam goes off to go have his powwow with God, desiring, mind you, Balaam still desires the payment, desires to curse where he can curse, right? He's being offered to pay this, to get paid to do this. And he goes off to curse Israel, and then God changes direction, changes his course, and said, curse, you get to bless instead. So the donkey had to change course. So Balaam had a target, had a goal. I'm going to hit this goal. I'm going to do this. And God says, nope, I'm shifting over here instead. So the donkey had to be shifted over instead. So then, of course, now they go to another dangerous, a narrower section. You can only see a part of Israel. It got smaller. You know, roads are big, paths are smaller. So guess what? Balaam is a smaller route too. So another dangerous path. This case is a smaller section. We'll do it smaller, but it's also to curse Israel. Israel. So we have this other curse, but it's a smaller one. It's a smaller section. Let's see a port of it. There's like a path that's smaller compared to a road. And then God goes the oracle. Yay, do I get to curse these people? And God says, no, I'm changing your course again. You're not going to curse, you're going to bless. So Balaam's actually following the pattern he drove his donkey to follow. It's a very similar pattern. It's not exact, but it's a very similar pattern. So in the third, after he gets rebuked by, because mind you, Balak rebuked him each time. Note, do you remember that Balaam rebuked the donkey each time? Right? I should have written that up there. He changed route and he got punished. Rebuke. I should put that off the donkey. I forgot to put that on there. Each time he was rebuked, for when the donkey changed directions, the master rebuked it each time. Now, Balaam gets rebuked also. Balak, he changes because Balak rebukes him each time. So change it to change your blessing from both when he cursed all of it, it was supposed to curse all of Israel. He didn't try to curse a part of Israel. He didn't. Each time was rebuke by the one who's paying you. Now, mind you, when we think of the relationship between an employee and employer, who is paying? The employer is paying. The employee is the recipient of the pay. The employee is supposed to do what the employer is paying you. So who is your master? Who's a servant? It's the employer versus the employee relationship. Balaam's being hired by Balak. So Balak perceives himself as Balaam's payer. The one who's paying. So Balaam should be considering Balak as his master. So Balak's master, use here loosely, Balaam's master, which is Balak. Man, those words. Balaam's master, which is like Balak, essentially, is the one rebuking him. Just like Balaam rebuked the donkey, Balak's rebuking Balaam. It's the same duplicate story here. So then the third time, this dangerous road. Now, at this point in time, the third attempt, Balaam is realizing there is no way I'm going to be able to curse. God does not want me to curse. He's saying no to cursing. He's making this realization. I can't make my way around this. I can't force or keep desiring to get a curse. God bless, allow me to curse somebody. Balaam's realizing this is not going to happen. Just like the donkey said, I can't get past this. I'm going to sit down. I quit. So Balaam's realizing, I can't get past this. I'm going to sit down. I'm just going to bless. I don't bother with wasting cursing. So same thing. He had the desire to curse. He realized, I can't. So the answer from God was no. So Balaam just said, fine, I will go ahead and bless. Well, we'll get that minute. So in this story, eventually, just like the donkey said, I quit. I can't do this. I can't get past this. Balaam realized, I quit. I can't do this. I can't get past this. I have to bless. It just is what it is. It's my only option. So in this story, he gets rebuked again by, of course, Balak. All right. So each time, just like the pattern. And then after this takes place, after these rebukes take place, these three blessings that he wanted to curse, he couldn't curse, two blessings, that's when Balaam says, now, Moab, I'm going to open your eyes, tell you what's going on. Just as the donkey had to open his mouth and tell the truth to Balaam, Balaam opens his mouth to the truth to Balak. Say, what's going to happen to you in the last days? So then he opens his mouth to tell the truth to Balak. So the donkey opened his mouth to tell the truth to Balak. And at that point in time, after he did that, then it points out that Balaam looked out and looked at Amalek, looked at the different country. He's looking, he's not physically seeing them like, hi, let's shake your hand. He's looking in the general direction as if his eyes are now opened eyes and told the other nations around them, what is actually what you can't see. You can't see your future. You can't see the star that's going to show up and obliterate your nations at different times and what Assyria is going to do. Opens the eyes and tells them the future truth about their death. What did the angel open the guy's eyes to? We opened Balaam's eyes to. Hey, I was going to kill you. This was your future. This was your plan, is death. Just like the angel, the same thing with Balaam. Balaam is saying to Balak as well as all the other nations. So I want you to just look at this and compare. There's a lot of similarities between what God did with the donkey and what God does with Balaam. We can see that these are essentially, symbolically speaking, equals. So a donkey equals Balaam. This donkey, not every donkey, but this donkey. Okay. So kind of makes sense so far. Any question about this thus far? Because I'll move on a little past this next. Hope we didn't lose anybody on the audience. If you did, you know, let me know. This is your opportunity to ask a few quick questions, because the next topic will be a branch off of this variation. Did I lose anybody so far? Hopefully not. Yeah, I'll drink some water. Anne, you have a question? Go ahead, Anne.
Yeah. Okay. I wrote it in my notes here. I have to get back. All right. So the words with and accompany as Balaam went with Balak up the high place, in contrast Correct. To Yeshua went up the mountain to be tempted of Satan. Is there a similarity?
So there are similarities between Balaam and Yeshua in different capacities. We're going to talk about that next, our next topic of discussion, moving on into that section. In the case of going with versus accompanying, I have not tried to look at the Greek words for Yeshua's storyline to know what word phrases are being used. And to be fair, it's extraordinarily weird to try to mess with Hebrew and Greek translations, trying to make them equivalent words, because there's so many words that don't actually mean the same thing. So it's really hard to say, well, just like Yeshua did this, and using a Hebrew word, like for example, atam, which is to accompany, Hebrew word to say, okay, this is the Hebrew word for it. We have the Septuagint, which tries to translate a lot of words to try to make them, well, this is equivalent to the Greek word. And I found enough errors in that that's like, okay, that's not actually what it's being used contextually. Yeah, it's used sometimes that way, but a lot of times it's not. So it's kind of weird to do that. So I can't speak to how Greek words translate into Hebrew very well. Not that they can't. I'm just not very good at doing that. I've run across a number of different books that discuss that topic. So it's really hard to be fair and do a just analysis on comparison in that specific question you were referring to regarding Yeshua being tested by Satan.
Thank you.
So any other questions so far on this? I'm going to move forward a little bit on my discussion with regards to Balaam and Messiah, though. Hoping to lose anybody, right? Okay, good. And I'm going to erase part of my, well, I don't want to erase part of it. You can keep most of it up there. I keep it up there. Yeah, we'll keep it up there. So I'm going to point to a few things here. So in the case of Balaam, the Balaam we mentioned is more of a soothsayer. As far as the Torah is concerned, I do correctly point out that in Balak's viewpoint, Balaam's not classed as a soothsayer, he's classed as a prophet. And I understand that that's true for Balak's perspective. But our Torah's perspective and Moses' perspective, because Moses is the one who's copying this down for us, at least we think it is, then he would be classified as a soothsayer in Moses' viewpoint or our Torah's viewpoint. So in the case of Balaam and this donkey, the reliable servant, now I compared them to a prophet. A prophet's supposed to be a reliable servant to God, isn't it? That's what we discuss prophets. We think of being reliable servants. Like they'll tell you what God's saying. That's their function. That's their job. I missed that one. And then so in the case of Messiah, I'm going to leave Messiah isn't... I'm going to write him up here, but he's not. I'm not saying he's these different things. So Messiah is supposed to rely on a prophet. So I'll put Messiah up here. He's not Balaam, by the way. So he classifies under this category, the reliable servant. That is true. Is Messiah humble? Yes, he's humble. So he classifies the humble. So you got a reliable servant is humble. Does Messiah follow his master, God? Well, yes. He points out multiple times, I can only do what God shows me to do. So just what he tells you to do, I do it. Just like a good servant, good prophet would do. So he's doing the exact same thing. He falls in the category of the correct grouping as a prophet. Hence why he called himself a prophet, as well as so did Peter called him a prophet. So there's a reason he's being grouped into these guys. These are important people. So he's being grouped in this category. So he's a reliable servant. He's a humble individual or humble in certain people's perspective. And he also follows his master. He follows correctly, just like a good donkey would do. You know, so Messiah walked or came into the Jerusalem on a donkey, right? There's a reason why that prophecy is there. It's a connection to think back, oh yeah, Balaam, he was on a donkey too, right? That's the idea. Think about it's designed to look and bring our attention to these topics. Now, Messiah's goal, it was to follow his master. Did God bring Messiah onto a dangerous road? Absolutely. Absolutely dangerous road. It was designed to kill him. All right, and it was like, but this guy didn't change paths. So it's an interesting contrast. We can see that the example is the same, but it is a different storyline in that where we have this dangerous road that both Balaam and the donkey were on for different reasons. The dangerous road for Messiah, however, was not dangerous because he was going to curse Israel. It was interesting to bless Israel, but that process became dangerous. This is interesting that when it comes to Messiah, God flipped the blessing and cursing from dangerous to not dangerous. So had he continued on the standard cursing of Israel, like everybody else was doing, he probably wouldn't have been killed. He'd have been fine, but he didn't. His methodology for blessing was in and of itself a dangerous path. for him. The blessing, of course, was to address our sins, transgressions, and iniquities, and help us to walk, to give us an example, what it looks to walk humbly before our God. That was the example he was being given. Now, it was dangerous to him, but not to us. It was blessing to us, but dangerous to him. It's a beautiful way that God is sitting there and taking these symbols and inverting them around for us to point to how Balaam and Messiah are so similar, but yet so very different. You know, it's kind of cool how he does that. So he's designed to follow the path. And there are multiple scenarios where Messiah almost got arrested, but was escaped for various reasons because his time wasn't set yet. I'm going to go through all those lists. There's a few of them there. I didn't count the number. I don't know if there's three or not. There could be three, actually. That's an interesting question. If anybody has the opportunity to look that up, how many times did Messiah escape the arrest? I didn't check that. Anyway, I should check that. He was almost stoned. I don't know how many. I don't know if it's three or not. But anyway, that totally off topic. Sorry, the sidebar. Forgive me. Jeff, somebody figure that out. That's kind of curious. I never counted the number of times he escapes arrest. Anyway, it might be three. That'd be fascinating. Anyway, so we have go through this. His job is to bless because God tells him to bless, but the blessing is via obviously his own personal death. And for all of Israel, I don't know how many times this topic was discussed, but the idea is this is his function. And his mouth, his job is to speak obviously truth. And discuss obviously the future, discusses the future events with the various gospels, discuss some things that Messiah tells about the future. So in this storyline, Messiah does actually match a good, reliable servant. That's his job. That's his function, his purpose. And he does what he's supposed to do, even though it's a dangerous path to him. Now, God doesn't rebuke Messiah in each of these scenarios. Who does the rebuking? The people do. Actually, more specifically, the people in charge do. They're the ones who actually do the rebuking process. They're telling him how you need to stop talking. Be quiet. You're full of it. Don't listen to him. He's bad for you. Everybody walk away, run away, kill him, whatever. The rebuking process wasn't by God the master, it's by the people who perceived they were a master of him. And because were the leadership of Israel at the time of Messiah, who were they in charge of? The Israelite citizens. I'm not referring to Rome. I'm talking about the actual religious leadership. Their religious worship, their service, how they responded, how they reacted to God, it was dictated by those who were in charge. So they perceived themselves as masters. You ever heard of the Sanhedrin? What is their job? That's exactly what their job was, to master the people and tell them, this is how you properly worship God. This is how you will not worship God. That's their function. We have another comment. Was it Hannah? Go ahead.
Yeah, to answer the question you had earlier regarding, I guess, how many times was Yeshua facing arrest? It's all recorded in the book of John, and the book of John records three different times.
No way. Really? Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Mate, that's fascinating. I can rattle
them off really quick. I'll probably make a separate post on Hillel's website on this, but so people can read it later. But John 7:30 talks about during the Feast of Tabernacles, the authorities try to arrest him. Then in John 8:59, after he declared that before Abraham, I am, they try to arrest him and stone him, right?
Right.
In John 10:39, when he was in Jerusalem during the Feast of Dedication, the authorities try to seize him.
That's interesting. That's pretty cool. That's an interesting comparison. Thank you, Tammy. That's awesome. Thank you. So also three times anymore, Luke 4. Is that a separate event or a duplicate event? Or do you know? Separate event. Oh, so maybe four times. Okay. So Luke 4. What we always say, it was Luke 4. What was the verses? I missed that. Luke 4. Oh, there it is. 28-30. Thank you. 28-30. So it's not exactly three. That's interesting. I was curiosity about that. The reason I was inquiring about the three is that in our Tanakh, when you have events of life and death, surrounded by the number three somewhere, typically associated with the Messiah one capacity or another. In particular, when something that swaps from life to death and number three is involved. And we have Balaam the donkey have those scenarios. So I was kind of curious, but maybe it's not that, maybe there is no connection when it comes to the numbers being happened.
Well, there is a dip. There is. So because the three instances in the book of John are all in Jerusalem, whereas the incident that Jeff found in the book of Luke is in Nazareth.
Oh, different location. Different location. So this would be a separate spot. So then, that's an interesting topic of this. Okay, I don't want to derail what I was discussing today, but that's kind of cool. All right. Anyhow, so my intent was to point out how the donkey and Balaam were equal in their story as far as how God was musing their relationship and their symbolism together, and how God was tying them together. Hence, we have a complete package story. At the same time, my intent was to also point out the Messiah is a type of Balaam, but in the inverted version. Because just like Balaam was inverted to Abraham, well, if you invert Balaam again, that means you have Abraham, Messiah, essentially equals, not physically equals, but as far as symbolic equals, and as far as Abraham being the friend of God. So we have a lot of scenarios where these are tied together. So if Messiah, so if Balaam's inverse of Abraham, and Messiah's actions invert the curses and blessings that Balaam does and flips them, that means we have two inversions. You invert something twice, gets you the exact same thing. It's a math thing. Anyway, so you have it doesn't matter. I don't want to lose anybody. So we have a comparison in the story that we have a good servant, a good righteous servant in Messiah, who actually essentially does what the donkey successfully does, right? The donkey successfully avoids the danger by going into the proper path, but the difference being Messiah, the proper path is the dangerous path, which is interesting how God's making this picture, this word picture play out. But the very end, the whole point, we have our gospel stories end, we in the book of the Acts, if anything else comes follows it, we have this storyline where the intent is that the truth itself, the truth actually being explained to us, is when we open our mouths, or actually in this case, the prophet opens his mouth, or Messiah opens his mouth, or the donkey opens his mouth, and tells us what is actually happening. When we see the actual happening, then we get our eyes get opened. Just like he opens his eyes, so we can see what's going on. So I think Balak is a fascinating Torah portion story, because it allows me to see the inversion process God uses in symbols in this storyline, which is really cool, because that tells me the depth or greater depth as far as how God views things. We have a similar scenario that takes place, this is totally off topic, so this takes place with the death of John the Baptist, and of course the story of Esther, right? Another inversion takes place there to give us greater depth and detail on how God is playing with these symbols and the storylines take place. So my opinion, the Daniel's opinion, I'm jumping back to opinion, is that Balaam's donkey story was pre-planned by God. That's my opinion, all right? To give us this symbolism so we can see how God inverts these things and then reapplies them in a different capacity, of course, different version with Messiah himself in different capacity. But the symbolism still holds true. The fact that we have a dangerous route to go and we have to change the dangerous route to be the positive route, even though it may cause our personal deaths, obviously Messiah's case, but the idea is that the ultimate objective is good. And what is the ultimate objective for both the donkey, Balaam, and Messiah? What is their target goal? It's this, to bless. What is the donkey traveling to Balak for? The donkey is just following what its master tells him to do. But the function, what the donkey is successfully doing, because the danger did say, go ahead and go. Go ahead, take the route. Follow the path as an accompaniment. Because the accompaniment is going to result in a bless. So donkey's doing what it's supposed to do. And the angel said, go ahead and go. Do it. Donkey, I'll let you live. That's fine. Go ahead and go. Because the objective is to bless Israel. Balaam, go ahead and go. Your objective is to bless Israel. Messiah, go ahead and go. Your objective is to bless Israel. That's the objective. Each of them have they're the same ultimate goal, to bless Israel. And they each do it by opening their mouths to tell the truth so that everybody else can open and see. That is the blessing. Speak the truth and our eyes get opened. Make sense? Did I lose anybody on this topic? Hopefully I didn't lose anybody. Any questions or comments regarding this subject matter or what I covered today regarding Balaam, the donkey, or Messiah? Because I'm going to conclude with one thought. I want to leave you with this thought. Larry, go ahead. What's your comment?
Well, he doesn't come across. I can't do this with this hearing myself twice. The Balaam doesn't come across very good, though, in this picture. Actually, he ends up disobeying and telling them to do things that the Lord had told them not to do. So maybe correct. That's the difference. I'm trying to figure out where, what? If he was doing the same thing as Messiah, then why did he get in so much trouble? It was his own pride right. that he was doing it with, rather than being a good servant, I guess. It was his pride that he was, and he was hoping he'd get some money out of it, probably. That's what we think, anyway.
Second Peter implies he was after the money. But I want to leave you with this parting thought regarding this topic, because you correctly analyze, hey, there's a flaw in the tail end of this comparison. There's an error here. I'm going to leave you with this thought to think about it yourself, because this is relevant to our modern day walk with God and our modern day world that we live in. So when I'm following doing something, right? Am I following my own intent or God's intent? Yeah, I'm supposed to be serving God. So I'm serving the Lord of some form. I'm serving a master of some form. Who is that master that I'm serving? Right? Ask yourself that. Yeah, you got to figure that out, right? Which master are you serving? Now, in this instance, I have to determine whether the service is, am I serving myself or my master? Who is my master? Is a master Balaam that's not so grand, the master God. I have to decide it. Is my master myself? What is my master? Who or what am I serving? How long will I serve this master before I change my mind and get bored with him or her or it? Right? Those things are questions. So I bring this up to you. So Balaam experiences a near-death experience, right? As close to death you're going to get. And he survives. And that's when he changes his heart or his intent. Does it take a near-death experience or some disaster for us to change our path? I don't know. It changes for some people, it probably does. Clearly, Balaam, it did. I don't know about everybody, but that's what we have to ask ourselves. And we ask ourselves, okay, I had this disastrous experience or near-death experience, whatever it may be. It's your own walk. I don't know. You had this experience. How long will that last? Will that persist in my change? Will I change my course and persist in the new course, or continue on like Balaam attempted to do, try to keep going back, right? He kept at least twice, tried to go back the dangerous route, the part that's not useful to me. Where is my persistence in what is right, right? So we have this scenario, for example, we have actually, and this is totally unintentional. So Trump was attempted assassination last week, right? Well, that's a close and near-death experience as I think he'll probably get, because that's pretty darn close. Will that change his course? I don't know. Will his new perspective on life shift? Will it persist? I don't know. But should it persist? Absolutely. Does it need to persist? Yes. Is it to his benefit to persist? Yes. Just like Balaam, it would be his benefit to persist and realize that my job is to bless and protect Israel. That's my job. That's my task. Persist in that. That would be a good thing. He didn't. He found a way around this and caused, I will subvert my blessings I just gave, all these blessings, I'm going to subvert them in order to get my own will done. Because who is Balaam's true master? Supposed to be God, but it's not. It's himself or his money. You could argue which one it happens to be. It's his own personal desires, personal gains. The donkey, however, did not have that problem. The donkey maintained its honor or loyalty to Balaam, because we have no record of donkey, in the past or future beyond this story, giving Balaam troubles. I assume that the donkey was returned to its normal, honorable status. So that persistence really, really matters. Just because you learn a lesson, or I learned a lesson from God, does not necessarily mean I'm going to maintain and hold on to that lesson for a long, enduring time period. I need to hold on to it for longer. Balaam clearly did not, right? Messiah, of course, did. That's a different story. But the donkey appears to have held on to her lesson, whatever lesson she was learning. I don't really know, but that's just what we have our story. So, Larry, you did correctly point out that there's a difference that Balaam did not stick with the blessing instruction. He then subverted it to return to his curse route that he was shooting for originally, right? He did actually end up doing that by the whole, let's get a bunch of women and have all have sex with each other. That was his methodology of taking God out of the equation and then allowing it to be disastrous and disease and, and destruction follow. So you're right that there is a distinct difference in Balaam, that he did not persist in the lessons that he learned on the God's function, God's goal was to bless Israel. Any other questions or comments?
Okay.
Here's the other question over here. Right, you wouldn't do it. Right. Okay, that's a good question. She's asking about the servant of God. Right. So she's pointing out that there's truly a danger. So did he perceive he was a true servant of God? Like, was he really a servant of God? Was he really acting? Was Balaam really acting? Your question is, was he really acting as a servant? Or just being a human being? That's a good question. And I don't have an answer for what Balaam was thinking all the time. Right? We don't know. But if and God, as you correctly point out, God could have done a little more, a little more closer to us, as you point out, you know, oh, I'm bleeding. What's going on? How'd this happen? A little close to the near-death experience may have helped some. I don't really know. But Balaam, clearly his true inner service function, though he was supposed to be a servant of God, his true inner master was not obviously God. It was truly his own desire for wealth and personal gain of some kind. As Peter points out, it was a desire for money. That was his true servant. That was his true master. And that's a distortion of what a prophet's job is. Do you recall that Naaman tried to pay Elisha for the cleansing of his leprosy? Elisha said, I didn't touch your money. Go away. Get out of here. Right? That would be, he wasn't doing it for money. That's a true servant of God. I don't need your stuff. God will probably just go away. You've been healed. I'll move on. That would be a true example of a good servant who did not desire his personal gain, unlike Gehazi, Elisha's servant, who went after the guy and said, yeah, we want money. Go ahead, give me money. So Gehazi wanted money. Of course, Gehazi got his leprosy in the process too. But you get them both. That was a package deal. So in the case of Balaam, his true servant, I don't think he's supposed to be a servant of God. Clearly, God was on his true master in the form of a real master. Yeah, yeah. Because the first indication, God's first instruction, that should have been enough to say, hey, God doesn't want me to go here. I don't need to keep asking him. I need to keep persisting. Clearly, God said no, accept the first answer, and don't say no, but, put the buts. God said no, we're done. I don't keep asking and persisting on my own desires. And Balaam obviously had that, he had his own, his true master was himself. It's supposed to be God, but his true master was himself. Anne, you have a question?
I just wanted to make a point of, so many of the prophets that Jonah, I mean, he also went the other way.
Yep.
And he definitely had a near-death experience.
Right, exactly.
Turned around.
And it changed his perspective.
But at the same time, in the end there, he had more compassion on that tree that grew up over him, than he had about the people of Nineveh, right? So,
right.
But think of all the times that I have gotten close to death experiences on the road. We've gone through a lot, and you say, well, what is the right path then, Lord? I'm going on the wrong path here.
And that's the important question. When you have I'm not telling you what to do, but if I have this personal experience, whatever happens to be, and okay, I see this thing has happened to me, or I've experienced something, or I've done something that's highly dangerous, I should have died or whatever, and I didn't. If you ask yourself, all right, when Balaam had finally asked the angel of the Lord the question, should I return home? And then he says, no, go ahead and go, but you're only going to say what I tell you to say. The really important question is, okay, God, I survived this. What's my job? Why? Meaning, we always ask the question when something bad happens to us, why me, Lord? Well, why not? But this should be the answer. But also the question is, okay, I have you saved me for whatever reason, like for all those Holocaust survivors, right? You ask this all the time, how come I lived and all these other people who are better than me didn't, right? They always ask that. I've heard that from many different reporters who interviewed, the survivor's guilt thing. Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, you should ask why and then go find the answer. Go do something that you perceive or understand that God directs you to go do. Go do the task over here given to Balaam. Go bless. Go help. Go be a blessing to someone. Not just a person, but anybody. To do what you were designed to do, not to your personal gain, as Balaam was doing, but go be a blessing. Go be a servant. Whatever capacity God gives you, I don't know what it looks like. Everybody's different. It always varies. But go do that. Because that's what Balaam realized. Oh, live the life worthy. Oh, I don't know that address. There's a New Testament verse about living a life that's worthy of the sacrifice of Messiah that he gave to you. I don't remember where the address is and where that verse is, but that's a similar idea. Any other comments or questions regarding this topic? I'm a little over time, so I apologize for that. All right, with no other questions then, I will conclude the prayer and turn this back over to Jeff.
One last question.
Oh, go ahead.
I'll translate for my mom.
Okay.
Just a commentary. How I thank Father for how he used the donkey to open up Balaam's eyes. This reminds me of my life when I was really far lost. And I would detest all the alcoholics, the drug addicts. People would tell me about God, and I always, you know, rejected God and his word. And I went to a spiritual retreat with these alcoholics and drug addicts. They had opened my eyes. And I know that God opened my eyes up there to see a new life. And he changed my life. And not only mine, but my son's. And now I see my grandchildren here. And you know, it's amazing to see how he's using my grandson Isaiah. You know, blessed really is Father, because he knows what he uses. I used to deny his word, but he used exactly what I detested the most. And today I respect all the alcoholics and drug addicts, because I know that behind them, there's a motive why they're there. Amen.
That's it. That's interesting. That's an awesome testimony, Elisa. That's pretty cool. All right. Anything else? All right. We'll go ahead and conclude with a prayer. Almighty God, our great Father, thank you for your kindness and love of each of us, Father, of our congregations and all your people throughout the world. We ask you to help us to keep our eyes and ears open. The path that you have us on, Father, we may not always understand it, but may it be a blessing, and may we continue to listen to your guidance along the way. And when we learn those lessons, we learn the path that we are on and learn what is pleasing your eyes. Help it to persist in our lives, to continue on the good path. And God, as scenarios change, as places and circumstances change, as people we've never met before come along or we change where we live, all those things, Father, they are still a path. And you know what path we are on. You know the individuals we interact with, the storylines, our pasts, and you know our future. May that future be a blessing to someone, anyone. And Father, may most importantly, may we always be your servant. May we remember that you are our master and there isn't someone else. It's not money. It's not fame. It's not anything else. It's not people's praise. It's just you. May you bless our efforts, Father, to follow that path wherever it leads. We glorify you in Yeshua's name. Amen.
You've been listening to a discussion at Hallel Fellowship. If you would like to hear more discussions or if you have any questions, visit the website at hallel.info. That's hallel.info. Hallel.info.